Coming to you live from the Soup Studios in beautiful downtown Metrodelphia, it's that Sultan of Sleuthing, that Houdini of Whodunits, Jack McCoy Private Eye. Tonight's thrilling episode, I don't know art, but if you hum a few bars.
There are two things required to make art, an artist and an audience. Whether you're talking about an actor and the people watching him, or a painter and the person hanging the portrait on their wall, art isn't art until someone reacts to it. Might be a good reaction like, what a beautiful sculpture. Or it might be more along the lines of, how do I get this annoying earworm out of my head? But in all cases, art requires an audience. Crime, on the other hand, does its best work when there is no audience. If you steal $1 million and everybody knows you stole $1 million, you're in for something of a bad time. But if you steal $500,000 and nobody knows you've done it, you are, as they say, sitting pretty. Yeah, you didn't listen to the second part, did you? You expect a gumshoe like me to have an opinion on crime, but an insightful comment on the nature of art? That's out of character, you're thinking. Well, dear listener, you wound me. I am, in fact, a connoisseur of art and all things artistic. I love getting dressed up and going out for a night at the symphony. I cannot think of a more enjoyable evening than box seats at a fine Italian opera. And I would dearly cherish the opportunity to cover my walls in beautiful portraits done by some of the great masters. It just so happens, I can't usually afford to do any of that stuff. And by usually, I of course mean ever.
So, corned beef on rye or turkey on sourdough?
You're offering me a sandwich?
I can eat them both, if needs must. Actually, doesn't sound like the worst idea I've ever had. But I still hadn't finished losing the Thanksgiving weight before the Christmas feast, and I did have 3 slices of pecan pie, so maybe not just now. Corned beef on rye, or turkey on sourdough.
I know they say not to look a gift horse in the mouth, but since you're packing turkey and cow, I think I'm in safer territory. What's the catch, Mindy?
No catch. I want to have lunch with my friend and pick his brain, if he doesn't mind. It seemed only fitting that I spring for the food.
You need a favor.
Not exactly need, but I would like a favor, yes. I would also, as I said, like to have lunch with my friend. That second part is the one you should focus on.
And why is that?
Because the favor is no big deal.
I will require some convincing.
You are a very suspicious man, Jack.
An aspect of my life which, as my friend, you ought to know right enough.
The favor is not a big deal. Besides, you like doing favors for me.
I do, do I?
Well, if you don't, then you spend an awful lot of your time doing something you hate.
Again, an aspect of my life which, as my friend...
Okay, fine. The way I see it, you have 3 options. 1, you kick me out of your office, and I go home and eat twice as much deli meat as I'd planned to. 2, you eat the turkey on sourdough and listen to what I'm asking for. Or 3, you eat the corned beef and listen to what I'm asking for.
Oh, boy. Give me the turkey, please, and have a seat.
Thank you, I will. You sure you don't want the corned beef?
You want the corned beef. You've had enough turkey in the last month to choke an ostrich. So you put the corned beef on rye bread, which you know I am not the biggest fan of, owing to 1 too many caraway seeds stuck in my teeth.
Gee, it's like you're a detective.
Mindy, tell me what you want.
The corned beef. We already established that.
Jack, will you be much longer?
Considering how long it took to get the lunch order straightened out, I'm guessing yes. What do you need, Ethel?
I have an architect arriving in a few minutes. I was going to do a tour for him.
You're behind on your rent.
Gee, it's like you're a detective.
You're being evicted?
Oh, I love that word.
I have 1 day to pay off my rent, which I would easily be able to do, except no fewer than 4 of my clients have come to me saying they accidentally spent more than they expected on their Christmas shopping. And they hope I don't mind if they're a bit behind on the bill. Whether I mind or not does not seem to affect the speed in which I will receive payment.
Does the phrase, I need a few more days and I'll pay you, I swear, seem somehow familiar? I'm just curious.
Oh, this is perfect.
Exactly.
Perfect?
Perfectly perfect.
We define the term differently.
No, it's great. This way, instead of asking you for the favor, I can hire you and make you do it.
Come again?
How much do you owe?
I can't ask you to do that.
He owes $1,200. I can ask.
So, several months' rent. Lucky I got a bonus at work. Will you take a check or do I need to go to the bank?
Are you a friend of Jack's?
I like to think so.
Then you should go to the bank.
Mindy, I can't let you spend your bonus on me.
Hey, I'd rather spend my bonus than lose my job.
Lose your job? You said the favor was no big deal.
Yeah, that was a lie. You think I'd try to bribe you with Chaucer's Deli if it was no big deal?
This is from Chaucer's? Why am I not eating it already?
You chow down. I'll hit the bank. When I come back, I'll put you to work.
Am I going to regret this?
Eat your sandwich and ask me that.
This must be a pretty big favor. What exactly do you do for a living, miss?
Didn't you hear me say she's a detective?
Yeah, he's Sam Spade. I'm Johnny Dollar.
I thought your name was Mindy.
Mindy and I go pretty far. Hang on. Sorry. Mindy and I go back pretty far. Some of my first cases were working with her. In the world of criminally adjacent investigation, there are three main avenues. The police, who are less criminally adjacent and more so deep in the woods, they don't remember where the path is. Then there's the suckers like me, the private investigators who very much don't want to spend all their time trying to prove the existence of extramarital affairs in a civil court, but very much do exactly that most of the time. Finally, there is the route that Mindy took. She is an insurance investigator. In other words, when you spend 15 years dutifully paying a company to protect you in the case of a disaster, and said company wants to do absolutely everything in their power to avoid paying you when said disaster strikes, they bring in Mindy to figure out in what way that disaster was absolutely not something they should be paying you for. If that sounds cynical, this is obviously your first episode, and I want to thank you for listening. Please like and subscribe. Anyway, Mindy's job is lucrative enough that she can afford to pull in freelancers whenever she wants. This is how we met, and as she is a fan of results, not to mention quality deli products, this is also how we became friends. Now I hear you asking the question, Jack, you are constantly in a state of near financial ruin. Why would you not also take up the mantle of an insurance investigator? A position which your friend would likely be happy to help you obtain. Well, I'll tell you. It comes down to a chronic need to get the right answers. Blame Mrs. Calloway, my fourth grade math teacher. When a client comes to me with a question, I do my best to get them the objectively true answer. In many cases, that's not what my clients want to hear. However, in those many cases, I can tell them to drop dead. Facts are facts, and I am only responsible for uncovering them. I am not responsible for their existence. However, the insurance company Mindy works for is interested only in the answer that says, we don't have to pay. And when they are the ones signing the paychecks and giving out the Christmas bonuses, it becomes just about impossible to tell them anything else.
10, 11, 1200.
Well, thank you, dearie. Jack, you can stay for another month. Sadly.
That was quick.
Nah, I got a branch at the end of the street. Did I miss anything during your monologue? He only said nice things about me, right?
I wasn't really paying attention, but I think so.
Ethel, vamoose, like yesterday.
All right, I'm going.
So, tell me your tale of woe.
Okay, so, picture this. It's 1990, and you're shopping for some artwork in a ritzy gallery. You meet a nice young fellow named Pablo Erasmus.
The Pablo Erasmus?
No. This was before he was the anything. Anyway, you've got some cash burning a hole in your pocket, and the kid seems nice, so you buy a painting.
This was a wise move on my part.
You're quite correct, because now it's 1992, and Pablo is, as they say, the shizzle.
Well, it is 1992, so I suppose they did.
Over the course of the year, you buy 6 more paintings of Pablo's, all of which you resell at a hefty profit almost immediately. But you keep a hold of the first painting for sentimental reasons.
Then it's 1993.
Which is a very important year in the life of Pablo Erasmus.
Owing to the fact it is the last year of his life.
And shortly after his death, you're visited by your insurance agent, just coming to make sure your policy is up to date. Seeing that you are sitting on approximately 7 gold mines in the form of 1 painting...
You put a rider on your insurance to make sure you're covered in case of fire.
Or theft.
Theft, you say? That seems like a not inconsequential detail.
Surprisingly, yes. Let's jump ahead to May of this year.
Skipping over the rest of my unfortunate grunge phase sounds good.
It's hard to tell this story when you drop those mental images.
Try.
Fine. The art world has a bit of a nostalgia period over Pablo Erasmus. Some museums are offering you a nice, hefty chunk of change just to display your early painting of the short-lived prodigy for a little while.
Boy, this was a good investment.
Except, while you're debating on which museum to donate your work to, a gentleman slips into your house under cover of darkness and steals several of your paintings, including the one by Erasmus.
So they have insurance against theft. Theft is committed. And you want me to find a way to keep you from having to pay insurance. That's a tall order.
Oh, I'm not even done with the plot yet. It so happens, the thief is captured. He's managed to get a fence to sell most of your art, but...
But the Erasmus painting is worth a lot more than the rest of the bunch, and only some very specific fences will deal with it.
Jury's still out on that, but I'm disturbed by your knowledge of art theft. Anyway, here's the big plot twist. We examine the painting we've recovered from the thief, and it's a fake. There's a manufacturer's mark on the frame, which means it was made in 1992, 2 years after the real painting was purchased.
Supposedly.
So you see my problem.
The owner is saying that clearly the thief made a forgery of the painting, sold the real Erasmus, and was getting ready to sell the forgery as well and double his profits.
Because when you buy an artwork which is stolen anyway, people have a hard time getting a refund if that art turns out to be fake. Problem is, the thief straight up denies making a forgery.
Which is exactly the sort of thing you'd do if you had already sold the painting and had the money stashed away somewhere for when you get out of prison.
As a for instance. And before you ask, forgery is very much in this man's skill set. So in order for my company not to have to write a check with way too many zeros, I have to do one of two things. I can either find the real painting...
If it exists.
Or I can prove that the painting was a forgery from day one. And, speaking of the number of days...
You have until New Year's Day, don't you?
No. Nobody works January 1st. I have until the 2nd.
One of the hardest parts of solving a mystery can sometimes be defining the problem. In this case... I was either trying to determine the whereabouts of a painting stolen a few months ago, or I was trying to prove a 20-year-old forgery had taken place.
Jack.
I stand corrected. The 90s were 30 years ago, which clearly means I am old. Anyway, if there was a real painting out there, we had exactly one option to find it. It was unlikely to work no matter how you slice it. But if we could find the original painting, or get any kind of proof that there was no original, our problem was solved. That meant it was a shot in the dark we had to take. Thank you for seeing us, Mr. Tucker.
Hey, it's not like I don't have the time. And I understand you brought me a carton of cigarettes.
Merry Christmas.
So you heard about the Erasmus painting I stole from the Carmichael lady.
Oh, forgive me. I expected a token protestation of innocence.
Nah, a guilty plea made more sense. They had me pretty dead to rights. I'm a better forger than a burglar, and I should have stuck to the first one.
That is refreshingly honest. Which makes the next question much more awkward. Namely, when you told the police you didn't forge the Erasmus painting, did you lie?
I did not.
Good.
Good.
Sadly, that doesn't help us at all.
Because you don't believe me?
In point of fact, I do. But belief is not proof, and we kinda need proof.
So you want proof that I didn't do something, which is that whole proving a negative thing.
Yeah, we're aware.
Well, I can't do that. Here's what I can tell you. I have not been charged with forgery of the Erasmus, because there's zero evidence that I did so. Also, I was offered reduced sentencing several times if I would just name the person to whom I sold the original. One could argue that if there was an original, it would be in my best interest to say so.
On the other hand, if what you stole was a forgery, whether you knew it or not, that massively reduces the value of what you stole, which in turn also reduces your sentence. So it would be in your best interest to say there was no original.
That could also be argued.
Well, it was nice seeing you, Mr. Tucker.
Sorry you came out here for nothing.
Not coincidentally, so are we.
So did you mean what you said that you believe him?
I do, in fact, which is just as well, because the option of finding the original painting is a complete dead end. We need to focus on figuring out how to prove there was no original, and the painting was always a fake.
Jackie! Jackie, me boy!
Wait, O'Hanlon? Seriously? What are you doing here?
Oh, I was working over Christmas, but I finally got some time to come and visit with me brother Shipton.
Your parents named a child Shipton O'Hanlon?
Sergeant O'Hanlon, this is Mindy Boskowitz. We're doing some investigation on an art heist. Sort of.
You don't say.
I do say. By the way, remind me what they collared Shipton for again.
Oh, sadly he robbed a jewelry store. He's doing 5 years, all because of a silly, worthless cameo.
Kinda like your appearance in this episode.
What?
Never mind. So now Mindy and I were firmly in the prove the painting was a fake 30 years ago camp. We headed back to Mindy's office, which was just as empty as you'd expect it to be for the holidays. First logical step, ask someone who knew the artist at the time if they remembered him painting it in the first place.
Thank you for taking our call, Mrs. Erasmus. Did you get the pictures we sent?
I almost didn't, but my granddaughter is visiting. She managed to help me download it from the Facebatch message.
Facebatch?
Shut up. Do you recognize the painting? Did you see your son working on it at the time?
Oh, I really don't know. He did all his work in his studio, and I wasn't allowed in there. One time I tried to help him tidy up the place. But what I thought was a pile of junk was a sculpture he'd been working on for a few days. Never really understood what he did.
Would anyone else have been allowed to look in his studio?
Maybe his girlfriend, Amber. But she died in the same car crash Pablo was in.
Yeah, I hope it goes without saying that we're sorry to bring up old memories. Do you recall him talking about selling any of his paintings at the time?
No, I'm sorry. He sold a few from time to time before he got really popular. But I don't really remember exactly when.
Well, thank you anyway. I appreciate it, and so does Mutual Wide State.
Oh, that reminds me. I have been meaning to update my life insurance.
Well, I'm not in sales, but I'll put in a call to one of our agents in your area and have someone call you in the new year.
That's very nice of you, dear. Happy holidays.
Well, there you go. We might not solve this case, but your company at least gets some business from Mrs. Erasmus.
You've heard that life insurance is when someone bets they're gonna die, and the insurance company bets that they won't.
Correct.
So how safe a bet is that for my company, given that she's 83 at present?
Not exactly what you'd call a numbers guy.
Whatever. We have nothing saying the painting itself never existed.
No, but...
I like that but.
No comment. Anyway, we can't prove the painting never happened, but how about the sale of the painting? You've got a copy of the receipt in the file, but maybe it's a fake.
Let me see that.
Okay, we're in luck. 30 years later, and they're still in business, which just about never happens in the art world.
Thank you for calling the Claiborne Gallery, home to the finest in modern artistic expression. We are currently closed for the holidays and will reopen on January 5th. Please visit our website for more information about our current inventory and future special events.
Swing and a miss. I knew we couldn't be that lucky.
I can't help but point out that we wouldn't be in this mess if you had come to me more than a few days before your deadline.
At the risk of setting a precedent, you are right. But, to be fair, this is not really my fault either. There was another guy on this case right up until he retired with 2 weeks' notice. He then took those 2 weeks in his remaining vacation time and disappeared into an ice fishing cabin with no contact information or access to a cell signal. This got dumped in my lap at the last minute and... What?
What?
You just had an idea. I can see it in your face.
I had an idle thought.
Is it a false idol? Because I am willing to sacrifice to it regardless.
So when we're talking about people who used to work for your company... The time between Christmas and New Year's is a pretty slow time in the business world. On the other hand, it's a terrible time to go and visit someone unannounced. They're often quite busy with obligations to family and friends. However, after we did some investigations using computer information... which was only mostly legal, we had some pretty compelling reasons to get a certain person to open the door. And after that visit, the second appointment was even easier to make.
Mr. and Mrs. Carmichael, thank you for making the time to see us. This is Jack McCoy. He's an independent consultant we're working with on this matter. I wanted to let you know we've finished our investigation, and I'm happy to present you with your check.
Oh, thank you so much. This is a check for $1.
And this is a waiver you'll need to sign saying you've been paid in full.
Why on earth would we do that? This policy was for...
Let's not get into the specific numbers. I wouldn't want Mr. McCoy to start feeling annoyed by how small a percentage he's getting on this deal.
Hey, what do you know? That ship just set sail.
I think we'll need to talk to our lawyer about this.
Yeah, about that. David, would you come in here, please?
I won't ask if you know David Hampton. I'm sure you remember the man who sold you your original insurance policy.
And if you don't, I'm guessing you do remember the man you've been paying off in blackmail for the past 30 years.
Not too much, of course. Not anywhere near as much as the policy would pay out. But then Mr. Hampton is the sort of blackmailer who gets a tiny bit from a whole bunch of clients. Sometimes it's all about volume.
You can't prove that.
Yet. They can't prove it yet.
Shut up, you idiot.
The thing to keep in mind is that it's not my job to prove anything. Both insurance fraud and blackmail are crimes, and it's the police who would have to actually prove those. All I can do is share what evidence I have. That's honestly not that much.
It is, however, enough for the cops to get warrants to look at your financial records. They can see how you've invested in this particular fraud with a very long-term plan to give yourself a nest egg to retire on. If they wanted to talk to Mr. Tucker in his prison cell, I think it's even money that the person who told him you had this painting to steal was connected to one of the people in this room.
Two of the people in this room. Not it.
I see you've bought tickets to the bus you're throwing us under. Just remember, if we go down, we're...
Stop giving people rope to hang us with, Seymour!
Can we return to the topic at hand, please? Sending the three of you to jail is not my problem, and I don't get anything out of it. What my company cares about is money. We can either spend that money trying to make sure you all suffer for your crimes, or we can just pocket all of the money you paid on your policy in the past and wind up very much in the black. You tried to defraud us. But you didn't, so we can just call it a wash. Of course, we won't be renewing your policy, but getting you behind bars isn't in our best interest.
What about him?
That's none of your business.
No, but it will probably shut them up. David here is going to tell Mindy about every single one of his blackmailing schemes.
We can then have similar conversations with all of those fraudsters, once again saving my company a metric buttload of cash.
And if you're worried that he seems to be getting off scot-free, let me point out that his blackmail money is more or less paying for his retirement, as he's got just about nothing saved up. He'll be selling his beach house within a year owing to the fact that he can't pay the property taxes on it.
But, to be extremely clear, while my company doesn't care what happens to you, I'm a bit more spiteful. If you don't take this check and sign this waiver, I will do everything I can to get you in jail and in poverty. Not necessarily in that order.
Happy holidays! And so it went. I'm a big fan of sending criminals up the river, but if Mutual Wide State didn't feel that need, who am I to argue? When you factor in how much of my rent Mindy ended up paying, and then you remember it was all for a little less than a day's work, well, I came out on top for once in my life. For a moment, I was reconsidering getting a job with Mindy, but then I realized something. It wasn't the pay that made this job so satisfying. It was working with my friend. And since I couldn't be sure the two of us would always be working together, yeah, that life was not for me. Not, mind you, that Mindy didn't do her best to make it tempting.
$800 more?
This one is a cashier's check, so don't worry about it bouncing. I understand January and February are pretty slow months for a private detective, so let's just keep his rent paid just in case.
You don't have to do that.
Shut up, Jack!
Following up on David Hampton's other blackmailees is saving my company a fortune. Or it would be if my department weren't having to work overtime to get them all off the company's ledger. 2 more months' rent is about the least I could do. Now, I could pay your rent for the year, but I know you're too proud for that. So instead, I took some of the money we absolutely owe you, and I got you something pretty.
You got me season passes to the Modern Art Museum? Thank you.
I got you 2. 1 for you, and 1 for a guest. You have to take me at least once.
I didn't know you were into modern art.
Oh, I hate it. If the painting doesn't have happy little trees, it makes me want to gag.
But you want to go anyway?
I don't know art, but I know what I like.
And so, once again, Jack McCoy shows us that in the hands of an artist, justice can be a masterpiece. But wicked men are like a painting on a wall. Sooner or later, it becomes a little crooked. When that happens, join us once again for a thrilling episode of Jack McCoy Private Eye.
You have been listening to Jack McCoy Private Eye. I don't know art, but if you hum a few bars. Produced by Seat of Our Pants Players, written and directed by Dan Wenzel. Jack was Rick Tennant. The announcer was Andrew Dell. Ethel was Jill Wenzel. Mr. Tucker was Ray Greenlee. Sergeant O'Hanlon was Dan Wenzel. Mrs. Erasmus was Andy Gastenge. The answering machine was Liz Music. The Carmichaels were Adam Gastenge and Rebecca Scheimer. David Hampton was Aaron Manka-White. And Mindy was Brianna Kuby. Fast Talking by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com, licensed by Creative Commons under Attribution 3.0. Other music and sound effects by www.freesfx.co.uk. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you later.